Welcome to Manager Tools. The three types of power and one to rule them. Part one. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. What are the three types of power in all organizations? What are the limits and uses of those powers? Which powers are easier or harder to attain? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Folks, before Mike introduces and gets into the details here, for those of you who are longtime listeners, or maybe even those who aren't, if you'd like a little inside baseball about this cast, a little bit of an unusual quirk about this recording, stay tuned to the end of the cast and we'll share it with you. It's kind of funny.
Okay. Yeah. You think it's funny.
Well, come on.
I'm glad somebody has a sense of humor. Okay. So let's get into the topic. We're going to talk about power today. And I guess to start off, I'm guessing that as soon as people, or a significant number of people, as soon as they hear we're going to talk about power, they just want to turn us off. Like, power to many people I know, managers I know, and to our audience, I'm sure, is just it's a bad word, right?
Yeah, I think it's a word that is so important and frankly just misunderstood. I mean, I think in today's world, I hate to get political, but it's the equivalent of saying millennial or conservative. It is loaded with baggage that it doesn't deserve. And for managers and professionals, power, understanding power, is a foundational concept. And you have to have power in order to affect results and make change, simply because of the definition of power. And the question becomes then, okay, if we can get you over that hurdle so that you can understand that power is necessary. And by the way, within 10 minutes of this cast, you'll believe it, power is necessary. And we're not talking about power.
Tyrannical power.
Tyrannical power, which is the bad, you know, which is the baggage it gets. But once you say that, you go, okay, well, explain it to me. And if you're at all interested in being an effective professional, and especially a manager, you need to know the types of power. You need to know how they differ, which ones are easy to get, which ones are hard to get, and which ones you should use in which situations. And for some of you, it may be helpful to realize that in the scientific world, or in the world of studying of power, it's completely okay to call it influence. Now, most people, when they hear influence, think of, oh, persuasion. And of course, the engineers immediately lose their minds and say, oh, I don't want to be persuaded. And that's, again, baggage on top of a word that's not really necessary. But if power, the word, bothers you, it's okay. We hope to disabuse you of that notion. And if it helps, every time we say power, think influence. And that will help you through this cast. If you don't understand the principles in this cast, you're at a disadvantage in the workplace. Against all people, not just people who crave power for the wrong reasons. And this is a rare departure for us. I mean, we've done 13 years of casts now. I think, are we coming up on our 13th, is it 14th anniversary, Mike? 2005.
Yeah. 13, 14 years, yeah.
Yeah. So we rarely talk about topics that are foundational that don't have action. We don't have, in this case, this cast is somewhat less actionable than most of our casts, but it's so darn important. And I end up spending so much time talking about it. I thought all of our listeners need to hear it. So here's the outline. It's really simple. There are three types of power, guys, and we're going to describe those three types of power in detail. But we're also at first going to talk about what power is and what power isn't. And then we'll go through all three: role power, expertise power, and relationship power.
Okay. So let's get into it. What power is and the three types of power. I started by saying, like, folks, power exists. I think we all know it. Some actually want to deny it and act as if it's not there, but it's like the law of gravity. You can pretend it doesn't exist, but if you get on top of a 10-story building and you step off the ledge, you're going to fall. You're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And power, and being unaware of power, and frankly, being unwilling to exercise it when necessary, you're going to get hurt. Sorry.
There's a simple way to think about it. The moment you start thinking about power, if you think about what you don't have and what somebody else has, which we'll talk about later, you're missing the point. All of us have power. And you need to understand what power is, and how your power is valuable to you now, and how your power may be different than someone else's, of a different type or of a different nature or of a different level. But not knowing this stuff or reflexively believing that somehow it's bad just puts you at a disadvantage. And it most puts you at a disadvantage to people who are unethical. We want ethical people to understand power. and to use it wisely. Okay, there are three types of power in organizations. There's role power, there's expertise power, and relationship power. Now look, guys, you might think, well, how do you know that there's three? Well, do some research and you'll discover there's three. But if you go online, and of course, you know, if it's on the web, it's true, you can find citations for categorizations of power that list five types of power and even six types of power. But I want to caution you, if you do that kind of stuff, if you look, and usually if a site is on the first page of Google and it has six types of power, it's benefiting from SEO, folks. That's why it's on the first page. It's because a lot of people look at it. It doesn't mean it's right. But if you start studying the five and six and seven types of power and so on, people attempting to reinvent the wheel, basically, about power in organizations, you'll realize that if you look closely at the different types they're mentioning, they all basically reduce to these three: role, expertise, and relationship power. An example of that is when sources do cite more than three types of power, they usually mention coercive power separately. Okay, now for the record, we're talking about power in organizations here. So we're not talking about a police officer's ability to coerce you because you did something wrong and he or she could put you in handcuffs. That's not organizational power, okay? But they mention coercive power. And they also mention reward power. And then another one they often mention, if you do some scrolling on the web, is legitimate power. And they list them separately. But that's actually misleading, because all of those powers, coercive power, reward power, and legitimate power, all reside in one place in an organization, and that's in your role. And if you start getting definitions with six, seven, eight, nine types of power, you quickly lose the ability to think about those powers quickly and easily and think about how to use them. Look, if you ever get into a discussion in a pub about power, just remind the person that you're talking to, and by the way, you'll do a lot better if you're sober when you do it, that the logical standard for an argument like this, for breaking down categories of power, is you should do as many categories as are necessary, but no more than that. And that's the standard sort of logical, rational test of necessary and sufficient. So you could break power down into 10 different categories, but it's not necessary. You could also break it down into two categories, but if you did that, you'd probably be abstracting it so much that you would confuse the differences between two of the base three types of power. So three for the types of power is necessary. There are three different ones. Role cannot be expertise or vice versa. Expertise cannot be relationship or vice versa, but you don't need any more than that. Okay. Now, this may be the most important concept we share. That's why it's first in the cast in this case. When people think power and you immediately have that negative in your mind, I want you to set that aside for a minute, because power is really easy to understand. It's the ability to get things done. And when you think about it, you very quickly come to the conclusion is, if you're not supervised or if a robot doesn't move your arms when you type emails or when you write code or when you're typing out a marketing plan, what you realize is everybody in your organization has some amount of power. Even if you're an individual contributor and nobody reports to you, which classically, role power tends to be what people think about when they're thinking about power. But even if you don't have anybody report to you and you're brand new, so you don't know anybody, and because you don't have any special skills, you don't have any relative expertise power, you still have some ability to get your own work done, and that means you have power. Now look, if you need more convincing than that, I happen to like logical arguments, and I happen to also like to understand where stuff comes from. The word power derives from Middle English and from a word that's power, P-O-E-I-R, which is a derivation from Latin of the word posse, which means to be able. Power is the ability to get things done and nothing more. You have the ability in your organization to get some things done. No, you probably can't set strategy unless you're the CEO or on the board or the SVP of strategy, okay? But just because you can't do that doesn't mean you have the power you have. And what too many people do is say, well, I have power of a level 10, She has power of level 30. Therefore, she has power and I don't. But this is not a zero-sum game. It's not a question of either or. You have power and other people have power. Some people have more role power than you, but less expertise and relationship power. Some people have no role power and have massive expertise power. So, power is the ability to get things done. And you need to understand where your ability to get things done comes from. So look, think of it this way, a sort of a thought experience to illuminate what power really is and how, in my estimation, over the last 20 years learning about it and listening to people talk about it and complain about it and deride it and so on, how different power is from what people think and say and feel, perhaps feel's the best word there, what they say it is. Consider two brand new individual contributor employees in an organization. They don't have any friends, and they have relatively equal expertise. Which has more power?
Most folks I know probably say neither.
Neither, all things being equal, which of course they never are. That's what we used to think. Mike and I used to think that. But guys, it's way more subtle than that. Even if they both do an equal amount of work, one might still have more power than the other one, and in fact might even have a lot more because of the type of work he or she does. Or, more precisely, the greater value of the work they do will give them more power because if you get paid more, you are considered more valuable because that's how organizations value things through the internal economy of pay and compensation.
That's right. Makes it pretty easy to figure out whose work is more valuable.
Exactly. You might say that they do the same amount of work, but it's possible that somebody's doing work that doesn't matter, and so that's not useful work, or they're not getting anything done relative to the mission of the organization. That's one of the reasons that power is misunderstood, because within the organization, getting things done that doesn't help the organization isn't power. So again, the way you know the value of people's work is by the proxy that we all know, but we forget all the time, which is compensation. Compensation is the way organizations put a value on work. Somebody who gets paid more than somebody else does, in fact, have more power in the eyes of the organization because, again, they can get more done of value, assuming the organization knows what its mission is and understands what is valuable and what isn't in terms of that mission. Organizations don't get to be big and successful without knowing that, or at least without getting a good sense of that, even if they don't get it right all the time, because they can get more done of value for the organization. Simple as that. Now, a problem some people have with power in general is the mistaken idea that power corrupts, that or that power is in fact corrupt. That the word itself implies negativity, corruption, and so on. But guys, power isn't corrupt unless you're willing to say that if you're an individual contributor in a company and they give you some tasks to do in a day and you accomplish those tasks, which proves you got your work done, and that meant you had power in that situation, then that would mean you're corrupt. But I can't imagine if you've been asked to do a good thing for a good organization by a good boss for a good reason, for a company that's ethical and reasonable and so on. I can't think that you doing your work makes you corrupt. So power is not corrupt. In fact, in some cases, power isn't corrupt even when it's coercive because there are larger forces at work. Power is just the ability to get things done. Everybody has some power. Some people have more power. Now, when you say power corrupts, and of course, absolute power corrupts absolutely, it's not really true. Many people have a great deal of power and are not corrupted by it. They consider it a responsibility to use the power wisely and to serve. But you know what? We don't read stories about them because they don't go to jail, because they don't do unethical acts. And as the saying goes, the newspapers aren't printing stories of all the planes who landed at the airport safely and on time. So we hear stories about people in power doing corrupt things, but that's a reflection of the person and not of the power. The vast majority of senior executives in large organizations and even small organizations are good people doing their best with the best of intentions. Now, in a complex world, guess what? You do the right thing, as you believe it, for the right reason. You never know really what the right thing is in terms of choosing your product mix or which country to open up a new division in, or how to invest the capital that you have. You don't know what's right and wrong. You're making some sort of judgment call. But these are good people making good choices as best they can understand it. Almost impossible to predict the future with any regularity. And something goes wrong. But that happens to good people. We don't write stories about that. We write stories about failure, but the stories we write about when we talk about people with power is people who were corrupt at some level internally. Power itself, the ability to get work done, is an ethically neutral idea. And again, I'll say this. I mentioned about people with two different amounts of power. Usually, folks, if you listen closely to discussions about power, comments about power aren't actually about the power itself. They're about the relative amounts of power between two people from the standpoint of the person with less power. And because that makes us fearful and at risk to a person with more power than us, we tend to say things that knock them down to our level. Well, he has more power than me, but he does this and that, so I don't respect or admire him. He's corrupt. He's been corrupted by his power, or he's got a big head, or, you know, she bosses people around, or whatever the case might be. That's what the discussions about power are about. Because, of course, again, the stories that get told are the stories that are dramatic, which usually involves comedy or tragedy.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, a lot of people are uncomfortable about power. I hear all the time, well, somebody tells me, well, I don't want power. I just want influence. Sounds great.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit at the beginning of the show. It sounds nice. It sounds humanistic. But really, guys, it is a distinction without a difference. It's an attempt somehow to imply that power is bad, but influence is somehow good. And in a way, we talked about baggage earlier. It's like most people's response to the word feedback. If I say feedback and I could wire people's brains up to see whether or not they smiled or frowned in their brain, the vast majority would frown. But in fact, feedback as a concept is neither good nor bad. It's not smiley or frowny, either one. It's not really either or. It's both. It's all. But many people mistakenly associate it with negative feedback, right? So while influence and power in some constructs are slightly different things, the difference isn't in their relative goodness. The difference is that influence is usually about how one affects another, how I influence someone, and quite often through examples or through speech verbally. Whereas power, when we talk about power, it includes not only how one affects others, but also how one affects, inspires, or controls oneself. Because if we all have some power, even if it's only over our own selves and our own work, we have the ability to use that power or not. We have ability to engage in work that's useful or not. A person who is in the same role as me and doesn't do any work has not used their power. In some way, you could actually say they had a little bit of role power to do to have some autonomy to do their own work, but they didn't use it. Well, does a person who has power but doesn't use it, do they actually have power? Well, according to some constructs about studying power, they don't. Power only exists when you use it. So, all that said, if it helps you gain more influence in your organization, to think of it as influence and not as power, that's great. Now, if you run across somebody like me in your organization, they'll say, yeah, you're using that word wrong, but that's not that big a deal. And I'm being a little bit of a vocabulary snob there. But look, whether you have power or influence, if you wield your power or your influence well and faithfully for the benefit of the organization and not for yourself, that's a good thing, whether you call it power or influence. If I have power, role power, expertise power, relationship power, it doesn't matter. You don't like me thinking that I have power, but I use my power for good, for the organization, with an ethical underpinning that says, I don't want to hurt other people. I want to respect other people. I want to serve society through how my organization serves society through its mission and so on. I'm using power and I'm achieving a good thing. You can't just call that influence just because you want it. Well, you can call it influence, but don't expect me to call it influence because I know I see it as power.
Well, let me ask you a different question, because my guess is there are still some listeners who are rebelling about the idea of using power and wielding power in their organization. But these same people would agree that they want to do good things. They want to achieve good things. And they may actually want to get to a point where they are exerting significant leadership in the organization. Is it possible, or maybe that's not the right question. I guess maybe the question is it likely? Is it likely that somebody is going to be able to get a lot of good done in an organization without understanding power and having a willingness to exercise it?
Boy, it's a tough question because it depends on how you define recognize. But I will say this. It's possible to be able to use power without thinking about the power. And it's also possible that if one person knows about power and the other person doesn't, it could still be the other person who doesn't know a lot about power could end up with more power in whatever form, role, relationship, expertise, power, without understanding the underlying concept or theories behind it. But I think the better test is, all things being equal, if we have two people who are relatively equally matched in a relatively equal role with the ability to develop relationships and with the ability to learn and potentially gain expertise, what is the likelihood that someone who doesn't understand power will in the long run outperform, meaning deliver more results of value to the organization? Could they outperform, you know, how likely is it that they could outperform somebody who knows about power? And the answer is, it's very unlikely. Now, if you're particularly gifted, if you're particularly smart, great. Hey, Mike, it's like when we, at our conferences, we say, look, the underlying manager tools come from data, that science that we didn't even invent, which says the four most important behaviors a manager can engage in are getting to know his or her people, talking about performance, asking for more, and push work down. Now, by the way, guys, there's actual scientific phrases for those, but those are the words we use to describe the four behaviors. And you'll notice that we don't actually teach getting to know your people. We teach one-on-ones, which, to use a word in fun, is the most powerful way we know how to get to know your people. And we teach a model for feedback to help you talk to your people about performance. The point of that is that you can, in fact, get to know your people without using one-on-ones. And in fact, you could become a great manager and leader without knowing our tools, and maybe even without knowing the underlying principles. There are a lot of people who have been successful before they learned about our tools, and then still said after they learned about our tools, they became even more successful. But the point of all that is that you'd have to be very successful. You'd have to be very, very good, notably better, probably 2-3 standard deviations better than the mean, the average person in your organization, to outperform them if in fact they know about these tools, these concepts, or the idea of power. So that's why we say at conferences, look, we don't mean to insult your intelligence, and we're not saying that you can't get ahead without one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, and delegation. And there are some cases, they're edge cases, they're fairly small, of people who are able to do that. And that's why we say, look, if you're a billionaire, or if you're as smart as Bill Gates, you don't need our tools. But most people who are listening, and most people at our conferences, aren't billionaires.
And most people listening would have to admit that Bill Gates is not an evil
yeah,
person, exactly. Right? I mean, he's doing a lot of good in the world, and he's very powerful, by the way.
I could easily see him on a table of 10 people. If I got to have dinner with 10 people, I'd love to sit down with him for an hour and just ask some questions and let him tolerate my stupid questions, just so I could glean a little bit of better understanding of the world and how he sees it. And I really admire what he did. I was talking to a young person the other day who was thinking about a career in sort of corporate professional relations. And they were thinking, you know, Google and Facebook and so on. I said, don't discount Microsoft. I mean, this is a company with a long history. It may not be cool, but I can assure you that they're a good company. I know lots of people at Microsoft. It's well-managed. Not as popular right now as Apple or Facebook or Google, but popularity isn't everything. The point I'm making is it possible that somebody doesn't know these things can do well? Sure. But that's not the question, right? The question is, if you know them, if you understand these principles, will you, all things being equal, do better than somebody who doesn't? And the answer is yes, you will. You have our word on that.
The difference is it's almost not fair, right? I mean, it's that big of a difference.
Yeah, I also think that if you think that power is somehow bad and you don't ever educate yourself, you're carrying around a preconceived notion, a misconception, and then you choose not to use powers that are available to you, because you don't think power is good, when in fact power is ethically neutral. It is the ethics of the person that makes the use of the power bad. And if you're a good person and you don't know the powers that are available to you and how to make them better, again, the people who are benefiting are the people who are going to get corrupted by the power. We need more good people to understand these things so that more good power, more ethical power can be brought to bear. That's the whole point of this show. And so again, I just want to say it again. And by the way, those of you who are really technical, who remember your engineering, remember your mechanical engineering or electrical engineering, surely you love our definition that power is the ability to get things done. Power is the ability to do work in science. That's Bingo. Literally what it is. Well, because yeah, it's power is the ability to do work. Well, guess what? Guess what we go to work for? To do work. Why do you think there's a phrase horsepower, right? It's the ability to do work, to move something. That's what we do in organizations. We move things. We do work. Power exists all the time. Power is happening in a dance around us, all around us. If we could see into the ninth dimension, we'd see power playing out every day, all the time, in all kinds of forms, or at least three different kinds of forms. And that means, by understanding this, each of us can get more power at work simply by doing more work, whether your role or relationship, even your role power or your relationship power, is affected at all.
Next week, this is obviously going to be a multi-parter. We're going to start talking about the forms.
I totally want to keep talking about power.
Just as a teaser, if, like many, when we first talk to folks about power, they understand power, they know what it is, they know that the types of power, but their first reaction is it's somehow fixed, or that I don't have power and it will take me a long time to get power.
And if I get power, somebody else gets less power.
Well, that's and that's not true either. But folks, both of those thoughts are wrong. And we'll share with you that with you starting next week.
Yeah.
So good.
I could talk about this for hours. And I, you know, guys,
and we have.
It's been nearly 14 years we're doing this show, and maybe less than five, six, maybe it's less than, I'll say single digits, have we had a cast that wasn't designed to be specifically actionable. We will be following up this series of casts on power with a whole bunch more about what it means. And if you go back, if you were to listen to this these casts first, and then go back and listen to us talk about one-on-ones or feedback or the decision brief model or so on, you'll hear power woven through all that stuff. Role power, the big one, obviously relationship power, and even expertise power. You'll hear it, and it'll be funny. It'll be like, the student is ready, and the teacher has appeared.
Okay, so that's it for our topic. You want to talk inside baseball?
Yeah, I gotta share this. This is for our longtime listeners. I still travel a good bit, not merely as much as I used to. And I often get asked by people that I'm talking to about the podcast and so on. And this actually happened to me in a manner of speaking outside of Baltimore this week. Somebody says, well, how do you record and how does it work? And many people are still surprised. If you're a longtime listener, this won't surprise you, that right now I'm recording at my desk in my home in Pebble Beach in California, and Mike is recording at his desk at home as well. And we're on the phone using a Skype call, but the Skype call is only for us to talk to one another. This is actually a technique called double ending, and I'm recording using a microphone separate from my phone microphone. I'm using a microphone to record my half of the call onto my Macintosh, and Mike is recording onto his, what, you're probably using a laptop today?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So he's recording into his MacBook Pro, I think. And we have software that marries up the two sound files, and our fabulous audio engineer, Paul Figiani, thank you, Paul, for the years of support. You're great. Actually marries those two files up and then has to do a little bit of massaging to them. But I often get asked, well, how long does it take you to record a call cast? And I say, well, I'm going to give you a two-part answer. And if you'll allow me to, I'm going to tell you my answer first before yours. Fortunately, you're not interviewing me, so I can do that. The first thing you need to know about our casts is they're always written before they're recorded. Mike and I have thought before that wouldn't it be great if I didn't have to spend 3 or 4 or even 5 hours or longer writing a podcast every week? My wife, Rhonda, often says, you have to write a term paper every week. Yeah, it's not the job most people would sign up for.
Right.
But all the casts are written. We are not reading the cast, but we have show notes in front of us that reads like a white paper. It doesn't read like most shows' show notes, which tend to be just highlights and timestamps to tell you where to go listen for that particular topic in the podcast. In other words, in most shows, the show notes are created after the show. Part of the reason that our shows, I think, stay fairly cogent, although every once in a while we do have tangents, and our core listeners say, Mark, don't ever get rid of your tangents. The reason why is because they're written in advance. If you're not a licensee, you've probably never seen our show notes, but for every one of our shows, if you're not a listener, you could become a licensee, and then you can download all the show notes for the shows, and just, you could read them like a book.
And you never have to listen to us again.
You never have to listen to me again. And I actually tell people in audiences, I say to them, hey, listen, look, if at the end of this session you don't like me, for whatever reason, we just clash, that happens. Don't listen to the podcast, because the podcasts are 90% me. I said, but read the show notes, because you want the information. The information's good, and you know, but you do have to pay for the right to download the show notes. So when you ask me the question, how long does the podcast take to record? It's a little misleading, because a big part of the recording is the 4 or 5 hours it takes me to write the cast. Okay, so now the real question you ask, how long does it take to record? Well, 99,000 times, or 99 times out of 100, or 999 out of 1,000, a 30-minute podcast takes us 30 minutes and 5 seconds to record. If you think that we go into post-production and Paul Fagiani spends hours cutting things out and mixing things together, and we do retake after retake after retake, folks, it just doesn't happen. If you listen carefully, you'll hear me stumble over my words, or I'll say something a second time because I didn't think I had it that right. But if we were actually recording for a pristine, like radio or TV or drama or something that was scripted, and our shows aren't scripted, show notes are not scripts. They're certainly not transcripts. If it was scripted, we would have to redo it. But we don't do it. We just talk to one another. And we know that in your normal vernacular, normal communication with other people, you don't say perfect sentences and perfect paragraphs and perfect three-part harmony all the time.
Yeah, there are absolute disadvantages, because every once in a while I'll say something and I know the grammar's not right. And as soon as I say it, I go, oh, God. But hey, that's the way it is.
But I'm pretty sure they don't write you, but they write me. So, you know, you said Trump got elected with more votes than Hillary Clinton, and that's wrong, and you got to stop that propaganda.
Did you say that? No, you never said that.
I did say that.
Oh, you did?
I did say that. And I, you know, I wrote to the person and said, well, actually, Trump, who got elected, got more electoral college votes, but that wasn't the point. The point was talking about politics in general anyway. But here's the end of the story. I'm sorry, it's too long-winded. What you don't know is this cast is a rare exception. This cast, which is roughly 30 minutes, took us roughly an hour to record. And the reason why, and Mike, I can't remember in the last 10 years that this has happened. I mean, I think it's happened once before where we had to re-record, but folks, we recorded this several days ago. And Mike checked his audio, and for some reason, we don't know why, his audio got corrupted. And of course, you can't just have the audio of just me. It needs to be a conversation. And so Mike texted me the other day and said, hey, got a problem with the file, done everything we could, can't do anything about it. And so we have to re-record. Now, usually we're recording sometime early in the week. Sometimes we're recording 1 or 2 or 3 weeks ahead. In this particular case, we recorded, I think, Mike, on Monday or Tuesday, maybe?
Yeah, I think it was Monday. Yeah. No, Tuesday.
Tuesday. And anyway, by Thursday, we found out. Unfortunately, I was on the road Thursday and Friday. I couldn't record yesterday morning. So we are now recording this very close to the time that we released the cast, nearly 4 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday. And for those of you who don't know, a little bit more inside baseball, we used to release casts on Monday. And a bunch of our listeners in India wrote to us and said, would you please start releasing casts on Sundays, so that we can have them for our Monday morning commute? And so that's why India is the reason why we release our cast on Sunday. And this cast may actually come out a little bit later than they normally do, because we still have post-production to do. And Paul Schwier, who works for us, and Paul Fagiani, our audio engineer, both are going to have to scramble around because we had a corrupted file. So if it sounded like this was the first take of this cast, well, that just means we're really good at talking to one another about management, because we can remember saying all the roughly the same things with different intonations and different sentences and so on about 5 days ago.
Yeah.
There's your Manager Tools podcast recording inside baseball.
That's right. If you think I didn't say anything insightful today, it's because I said it earlier this week.
And you got lucky last week. You got lucky a few days ago, but not today. Yeah. And if you can't have a sense of humor, right? And so Mike texted me, and so I said, okay, let's record. We'll do it again. And, you know, stuff happens. The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry.
All right. There you go, guys. Now you know it. Mike screwed up.
Come on. Piece of software screwed up. All right. Thanks, partner.
All right, my friend. Thanks. We'll see you soon. Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll continue with this series next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.